history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there really are heroes around you, seemingly ordinary Americans who have endured extraordinary circumstances for our sake. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along that journey, we learn so much. We're always educated. We're entertained. Often we are inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. With this week's program falling so close to Christmas, I thought that would be an appropriate theme today. By the time we're done, we're going to hear about a man who flew through the air delivering candy to children. Not Santa Claus, but this 97-year-old has become a legendary figure. I know his story is going to get you in the Christmas spirit, but before we get to that, I want you to imagine what our men and women in uniform are facing this Christmas. When you gather with your family and celebrate, can you take a moment to remember and maybe even pray for the countless members of our military who are going to be oh so far away from their families? That was the case for thousands upon thousands of young Americans during the Battle of the Bulge in December 1944. And today we're going to hear some of their stories. Some of the voices you'll hear from are men who are still with us. A few others will be those who will be remembered around the Christmas table this year, but shared their stories here on Hometown Heroes in the past. Like Harmon Atwater. He had left behind a wife, Dawn, and their infant son in the States when he headed overseas. The hand-sewn socks Dawn sent him helped him avoid the frozen feet that plagued so many servicemen during the Battle of the Bulge. Now just imagine yourself in the surreal scene he paints from Christmas 1944 while serving with the 26th Infantry Division.
That Christmas, we were dug in. The snow was probably 3 and 4 feet deep, and you dig down to find a spot, and the ground was froze down 2 or 3 feet, so there wasn't no way you could dig a foxhole. Christmas Eve, there's nothing going on, nobody's moving, and we're thinking, well, tomorrow will be the same. The Germans were facing the same problems we were having, so there wasn't much fighting going on. And the old sergeant comes by and he said, we're going to have a Christmas dinner shortly. And we all laughed like, you got special K rations, you know? And it wasn't, I guess, around noontime. Here come a Jeep, chains on all four wheels, and a trailer loaded with cans, big containers of food, turkey, mashed potatoes, everything that you need for Christmas dinner. And this is, I mean, really a great treat. It lifted our morale, you know, and God knows it needed it. But what kind of stuck in my mind was, there was three men to a Jeep, and they was saying, eat fast, boys. They was wanting to get out of there because they were shelling us, you know. But I thought, well, we'd say, well, stick around, enjoy your meal. And they'd say, well, we got other places to go. Well, they did to other troops. But that was an amazing thing, that we had people thinking behind us that knew that would boost our morale. But can you imagine sitting in snow and ice at that time, probably 10 below zero? It was quite amazing. Somebody planned way ahead on that.
And 3 weeks later, he would receive his Christmas present. Now, I don't know how many of us would consider being wounded a Christmas present, but Harmon did.
We was in a wooded area, and a shell burst, and a number of men were wounded. When a shell hit the tree bursts, plus the shell. So you get a double treatment. And I get hit in the right hand. When the ambulance come to pick up the others that got hit, they took us back to Luxembourg City, Luxembourg. Had a big, large hospital there. And I didn't find out till after I was there a day or so that it was German troops were there too that had been wounded. They were in the separate rooms, but they were connected. But that was a pleasant stay because I wasn't bedridden, and I had a sore hand for a few days. But I got to add this little ditty. I was laying on my bed the second night there, and I heard the nurses talking, mostly the women nurses. They were talking about midnight they were going for supper. And I brightened up, and I said, well, where do you go for supper? They said, to the kitchen, just down the next floor. And I said, well, they'd feed somebody else that's hungry. And they both said, come on with us. You want to eat? You bet. So I went down with them, and I hadn't had a decent meal or didn't taste good. Went down to the kitchen, and the old cook comes out, and he said, what do you want, soldier? And I said, man, I said, I'll have me a stack of pancakes. He brought me out about 6 or 8 pancakes, and nurses was laughing, you know. And I ate that, boy, it tastes good. And I'm leaned back in the seat, and my stomach began to boil. And I said, is there a restroom around here? And they said, right there. And I went in there, and I lost the whole thing. But I come back, and they want to know. He said, you all right? And I said, oh, yeah. And the cook come out, and he said, well, can I get you something light? I said, I'll have me another stack of pancakes.
Didn't learn your lesson, or you're just priming the pump, one of the two. Well, and that's a lighthearted story from that stay in the hospital, but that took you off the lines for the rest of the Battle of the Bulge, and what do you think is the significance of that, being off the lines for 20 days?
Let me say this. I knew probably 15 guys when I got hit, and I come back on the line in Sarlaten, Germany, right on the Siegfried line, and there was one man that I knew, and he was a cook, Sammy Rakowski. And the rest were all gone. I don't know whether they were killed or wounded, but there was never heard from them again. So I always felt that 20 days off the line probably saved my life.
And what a life he would lead. His heroics in Europe reflected in a silver star, but when sitting in the log cabin style home in Tulare, California that he built himself, it was the Purple Heart on the wall that reminded him of that Christmas gift disguised as German shrapnel all those years ago. Harmon passed away in 2014, as in love with Dawn as he was when he married her 71 years before. And while Harmon Atwater was fighting the Battle of the Bulge with the 26th Infantry Division, Julian Sarge Sargentini was there running communication lines with the 75th Infantry Division.
It was Christmas. We went into fighting just around Christmas right there. We were in the lines during Christmas. I remember it was just out of Soy that I was in my first blow-up. Somebody stepped on a mine, or what happened, we don't know. But anyway, there was about 8 engineers that were killed that night, you know. So, and before that, our unit had been in combat, and we lost quite a few men. I'll never know just how many, but we knew that we had lost a lot of them. And we stood out in the snow with our dark uniforms. We didn't have camouflage like the Germans did. They had white uniforms, and we didn't. We stood out like stumps out there in the field, in a white field, so we were good targets.
And this is what would become known as the Battle of the Bulge. This is about a week into that, and the 75th was called in as part of that. So you mentioned that incident, and you know, not to get gory or harp on it, but just so people understand what you went through. So this is at nighttime and pretty close to you. A mine goes off. It kills 8 guys.
I was blown up in the same thing, and I suffered a broken pelvis bone at the time, and that was about the extent of my injury on that one right there.
So you must have been pretty close to this mine that went off.
We were. I don't know just how close it was, but I remember the guys laying around, and one of the lieutenants right there, he crawled over and he says, are you hurt, soldier? I said, no. He says, I don't think I am, you know, because I was deaf, but I could make him out. And I said, no, I'm not, because I could move. And he says, okay, help me. So we dragged a few carcasses out of the way and took some over to the by that time the medics had set up a temporary aid station, and we took some boys over there. So anyway, that was my first taste of real getting into the action.
Well, you say that's your first taste. I mean, that's a smack in the face. And you're describing it. I just want to be clear. So this mine explosion, it knocked you from your feet into the snow?
Yes. It knocked me up against a wall. And I don't know just how I hit the wall, but with my back. And I think it was a sharp box or something, because there was a lot of crates laying around between the wall and the crates. I hit something and it hit my back end. Anyway, that was my first taste of it. The real action before that, it was just running lines. We thought of, you know, we kept looking for relief. They told us we'd be relieved in 3 days. We kept looking for that third day. Well, the third day came and there was no relief. And then the fourth day and the fifth day and the sixth day. And it went on like that. Pretty soon we just gave up, you know.
Again, I'm just, you know, imagining what this must have been like for you. And this is Christmas time, 1944. So you're only 20 years old. You're out here half a world away from all your family. It's freezing cold. You get blown off your feet into a wall. You can't hear because of the concussion of this mine. And then you just said something that you guys, in trying to help with the situation, you were dragging carcasses through the snow. Now, those carcasses a minute before were your buddies, guys that you'd been serving with out there. How did you handle the emotions in that moment, or were you just completely numb to it?
They were engineers, and I knew some of them, but you never get real close to another unit. You know, you see them and work with them and like that, but you don't know them very well. And while we were there anyway, after that little deal was over, we were still in the area. It was New Year's Eve, and we opened up with everything that artillery had in the background, and the army had in the background. They threw everything they could for a New Year's present to the Germans, and they did. They pounded the heck out of them for a long time, but then the Germans threw some of it back at us, you know, but not as much. Afterwards, back at the CP, somebody had a radio, and they were Bing Crosby was singing White Christmas, and that always got to me, you know, that funny how some things will remind you.
That's not the kind of White Christmas you had in mind. You're out there in the snow in the coldest winter Europe had ever seen, but he says, I'm dreaming of a white Christmas. You were probably dreaming of coming back home, huh?
Well, I wasn't dreaming of a white Christmas, that's for sure. I knew it wasn't. I was wishing I was home, yes.
And every year, I'm sure you hear that song once or twice during the holiday season. What comes to mind for you when you hear that come on the radio?
I turn it off or I walk away.
It's just too painful for you to remember what you saw?
Well, it brings back a lot of memories, and sometimes, you know, something will... It's just like when I went by the Vietnam Wall, this honor flight, it just does something to you. It just brings... when you see a lot of dead people and you picture them in your mind, you know, you see them, and then to know there was 400,000 guys... I didn't see that many, but I can see people laying all over the snow and like that. I see them get loaded up in trucks after it's all over with, and they're just like cordwood. They throw them in the back end of the trucks and frozen bodies. So it never leaves you. You think back. Something reminds you of it.
For those who've received the Purple Heart, that medal alone can be a powerful reminder of the price of freedom. Dick Reiber received his after having his jaw shattered by German shrapnel in early 1945 at the Battle of the Bulge. But a couple weeks prior, he endured a situation he came to view as his own personal Christmas miracle.
Christmas Day, we were a little town somewhere in Belgium.
Uh-huh.
And somebody started shooting machine guns at us from the woods up a long hill.
This is Christmas Day, 1944.
I think it was Christmas Day. We had the ground around there was frozen about 6 inches, four to six inches deep.
Yeah.
At that time, I had been transferred to carry ammunition for a 60-millimeter mortar.
All right.
And it came in big cardboard tubes with a tape around it.
Right.
Well, you should have been able to grab a hold of the tape, and if you got it right, you could zip it off and take the tube apart.
Okay.
Some of the boys didn't seem to grasp the exact mechanics, or the tape was old.
Or frozen.
Or both. All three.
Yeah.
And they were just dumping those to one side because they couldn't get the cap off. I said, here, let me take care of that. And I got out my little pocket knife with a little short stubby blade that I use for that cutting things. Mm-hmm. And I'd zip on down through that tape and grab the end of it on the point of the blade and rip it off and had ammunition ready. We heard this Jerry machine gunner up there, and we could hear the bullets going overhead. And the lead gunner for that mortar says, hold it a minute, I'm going to re-aim this. Entirely by sight or sound, I don't think he could see anything, but entirely by sound, I believe, he reset the aiming of it. You know, they lean it back and forth to
right.
aim it.
Yeah.
And then they take, on the tail end of it, there's charges, different charges. And they can take and leave most of them on if they want the project to go a long way.
Right.
Or they take most of them off if they just want to get it just barely in front of their people out in front of them. He reset the mortar, reset the charge on a shell. He dropped two shells down the barrel of that thing. You take it and drop it down. When it hits the bottom, it's like a shotgun shell in the bottom.
Right.
It hits a firing pin and it goes off. And he dropped two, waited a couple minutes. We never heard any more from that gunner.
Mm-hmm. So even blind to where that position
was. That guy was a miracle. I mean, he was just had a touch for it.
That is impressive.
And I never did learn his name.
So that there's another situation where if he doesn't miraculously pull that off, you guys might have been sitting ducks for that German machine gun?
Yes.
Hearing these Christmas stories from war sure makes me thankful for the freedom we have and that the overwhelming majority of us have never had to spend our holiday freezing in a foxhole under fire from the enemy. Let us not take that for granted, and may we never take our freedom for granted. Those who have had to live without it never do, and we're going to hear from some of them when we come back. Three men who spent Christmas 1944 as prisoners of the Germans. When Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.